You nervous? Okay, well, get on up. Addict named Jan. It's a great day to be clean, right? I want to, first of all, let me start off by thanking the committee. As usual, God always have a plan that supersedes anything I can ever come up with for my life. You know, I take no credit for anything you hear from me. Give it all to God, because my story is the type of story that can hurt, it can take you down low. But then if you watch the flow of God, you see how high you can go by any means necessary. You just don't use one day at a time. And if you learn how to count it all joy. You know, but when I started out in addiction, I was probably 2 years old. You know, it didn't start with a drug. It started with a feeling. Actually, it started with curiosity. I understand now that everything begins with a thought. Right. So I remember looking through this skeleton keyhole, watching my biological father have sex with my oldest living sister. That was the first glimpse of anything along this addiction line that I saw. And the next year, when I turned 3, my only living brother did the same thing to me. And it went on for 4 years in a row, nonstop, measles, mumps, pneumonia, it didn't matter. I remember he would just pull me down off the couch, do his business, and go on about his day, you know, as if nothing happened. And he would always tell me that, you know, what he would do if I ever told anybody. You know how that scene go. I'm quite sure a lot of us have been through molestation in here. And I bought off into it. I believed him. I began to have this reoccurring nightmare that I would come home from school and that I would see my mother's body hanging from the top floor window of an apartment complex we used to live in. You know, it was called Comanche. I'm not from here. I'm from a city called Tulsa in a state called Oklahoma. You know, but the funny thing about it, my story started there, but my blessings began here. You know, because when I found that God has been carrying me, man, I just, first of all, I couldn't believe it, because I don't see how you can carry a person through all of those storms that I went through. You know, because after it was found out 4 years later what my brother was doing to me, and I thought by this time, because I lived in a fantasy land, I watched a lot of TV, you know, and I can easily alter my reality based on what I think I see. You understand what I'm saying? I don't know what the Brady Bunch life was really like past the script, but it sure looked better than what I was living. So in my mind, that was what life should have been like. You know, even trying to be white, because they used to tell me back in the day, as dark as I was pretty to be black. So instantly, I thought that being dark-skinned was a problem. You know, if you wasn't light-skinned, then wouldn't nobody want to love you, right? So anyway, by the time my mother found out what my brother was doing to me, I thought she would embrace me like they do on Brady Bunch, and they skin their knee, they mother hug them. They steal somebody's bike or steal a toy out the store, and they get a hug and a lecture. I didn't get that. I got beat. You know, I got beat, and instantly I believed it was something I had done. I had deserved what happened to me, and that started my process of self-abuse, self-hatred, and false identities. It came a time after the abuse started with my mother that, you know, I found a way to survive stuff. You know, in my mind, when my brother was molesting me, he became my boyfriend. That was the only way it was not real. You know, and when I got around here to Narcotics Anonymous, my sponsor told me, when I told her my story, you know, I didn't really think she heard me, because she told me that my mom, that everybody did the best they could with what they had. And I'm like, what? You as usual, you know, you're not listening to me. You know, and I went on to tell her again, and she started telling me how she identified, because similar things happened to her. You know, so that made me feel comfortable enough to share some more stuff with her, right? And we're talking about, the topic is what? Doing something different, not him or her. Man, you know, we talk in the meetings on a daily basis. You always hear recovering addicts say they don't know when the obsession left them for the drug. How about not knowing when the obsession left you to just be a whore? Because I don't know about y'all, but whore was a survival tactic for me. It was a state that I could be in where I didn't have to really own any responsibility. I wasn't too emotionally attached, so I thought, because I swear every time the brother said he was leaving, I found another one just as bad. I found another one just as bad in the process of him leaving. I never knew how to spend time with myself. We talk about doing something different, not him or her, right? I don't know if y'all got a her in y'all story. You know, that's really not my story, but I do remember after being molested by my brother and finding that orgasm piece to be the first drug, right, that I started bumping bodies with boys and girls in the neighborhood. I was just chasing the feeling. I didn't know what anything about lifestyles, homosexual. I didn't know nothing about none of that. I just needed to keep that high going. You know what I'm saying? So by the time I found out that I had the disease of addiction, it was long after I had already tricked first. See, my story is I didn't get into the behaviors of addiction in addiction, in drug use addiction. I got caught up in tricking when I was homeless. I don't know if any of y'all ever lived from pillow to bedpost with a newborn baby, but I did. And I remember a brother telling me, you know, it's snowing outside, you know, I'll buy you some Pampers, I'll buy you some milk, you know, you just come in and take care of me, and you know, you ain't got to leave. You ain't got to leave. You can stay here. I got to get up and go to work at 6, but you and your baby can stay here. And at 5 a.m., I had to go. And I had already sold myself. And I ain't know how to sell myself for money. I just needed a place to sleep. I needed some Pampers and some milk. I had a type of working relationship with my parent that they taught me how to survive or how to go out and get welfare. None of that. I was clueless. I was 17. I slept in more beds by the time I was 19 than I did in active addiction. You hear me? Because by the time I met crack, my trick was up a tree. I don't know how y'all did y'all story. But I was one of those. See, what you see now is nothing but God. If you see anything blowing off of me, please charge it to God. Because I'm the addict that when I use. And I have to share this for identification because the addict in here that think they're the worst in the room need to be clear. Just because everything shines, that don't mean it's gold. Okay? Because I don't look like this when I come in recovery. I come in here, I'm skinny. I mean, I'm so skinny that, I don't know. I can't. Probably this microphone is about as big as I'm going to be. You know? I don't have no hips. I don't have no butt. I don't have anything. You know what I'm saying? But I still think I look good, you know? You know how we do, right? I got about four. I got one of them 4 or 5 pair of pants type of stories and pockets touching and all that kind of stuff, right? But the denial had me so deep, right? Denial really is a river run deep, but refusal is a lot worse. You know? So when I got in here and I was, like I said, I don't look like this. I don't smell like this. I don't bathe. I don't brush my teeth. I don't feed my kids. I let you put your dogs in my house so they'll have a place to stay, and they defecate, and I just tell my kids, don't sit in that spot. I live in a house where there's trash all up the steps, all in the other rooms, everywhere. I ain't talking about just ashes and paraphernalia. I'm talking about filth. I'm talking about living like I was in the alley, in a house that was fully furnished until I sold everything. I'm an everything must go kind of addict. Everything physical, everything spiritual, everything emotional, everything, anything, all gotta go. And I share this, and I hope somebody can relate. I'm telling you, I was so low at one point that the idea of selling one of my kids crossed my mind. I'll never forget that day. And when I saw that movie, Holiday, and that crackhead lady, as much as she loved her daughter, it just didn't seem like a bad idea for just that moment to let that grown hustler just do whatever he needed to do. I mean, it wasn't, you know, he just wanted to get, you know, just a pretty face. You know what I mean? Oh, my God, I felt her. And that was another script. But it was so real. You got to find your hope where you can find it. You know what I'm saying? Damn, doing something different, not him or her. I got to the rooms of narcotics, and I was literally broken. But I was too angry and ignorant to own it. I was so mad at the world. I was mad at my mother. I was mad at God. I was mad at me. I was mad at that baby that was growing in my stomach that I did not want. See, I got 6 kids, and I love every last one of them. I did not want all them babies after the check stopped. I don't know what kind of story y'all got. My kids sat a purpose in my life. And it wasn't because I had all this great love to give. I didn't know love. I didn't know how to give it or receive. I needed a check to keep coming. I didn't know how to
hugged him. I remember coming to the meetings and we would be in the circle trying to do the prayer and y'all would start hugging on me and I would find a reason to leave out. Because I couldn't get with that touch thing. I didn't understand why we needed to touch each other, because my identification with touch was whorish, tricking, rape. It was nothing ever good. Nobody ever loved me enough to hug me and embrace me and tell me it was going to be all right. They told me you wasn't nothing. You wasn't never going to be nothing. And you look just like your father. Right? And every time I looked in the mirror, all I saw was that man's face. So all the rest of it had to be true. So I went on this quest to prove my mama and everybody wrong, and I became the exact person that she said I was. I wasn't nothing. I hear some of y'all coming here. I mean, I watched some newcomers coming in. I just acknowledged my 12th year, April 11th. Right? But for the relapser, don't get it twisted. I know what it's like to come in the room, sit in the back of the meeting, get with the misfits, and absorb all the misinformation, get with the people that's looking good, ain't working on nothing, collect some clean time, and then go back out and use. So just for identification's sake, so we'll be clear about this, unless you are first in recovery, you cannot relapse. What I call my time in the back of the meeting was a vacation. I was on vacation from my ultimate reality. I thought I was supposed to live and die like that. And I immediately went back. As soon as the hips spreaded, the butt popped out, the skin cleared up, the teeth whitened, my prices shot up, I changed nothing, and I did everybody. I don't know about what kind of story y'all came in here with. I had a hole in my gut that said I needed more of you in it and less of God, because I didn't have a God understanding when I got here. I had the type of sponsor that said, you know, I didn't know how to pray. My prayer was send another one down the street. God, get me out of this one. Let the judge, you know, say, you know, you can go, you know, whatever. Those are my kind of prayer. My concept of God was punishing. When I was a child, they told us about, you know, you was going to hell anyway. They created a place just for us called Chisholm. That's some country stuff. You hear me? But it was fire and brimstone. It was dragons. It was no light. It was always darkness. And I was living that right here on earth. So I had no reason to believe in anything loving and caring that had my best interests at heart. Everybody said they loved me and cared for me and had my best interests at heart screwed me. Some of them without condoms and most of them without my permission. But a few of y'all, I assumed a position for. See, I don't know if y'all realize that in recovery, we still assume the position. You know, because I don't know about y'all, but I got to a place in here where my hole was so big, but I knew not to use no matter what, but I didn't know recovery meant actually changing everything. Right? So what I did was when I got with other people and I tried to fill that hole and you abused me at the same time you told me you cared so much and I was spending all my damn money on you, you know, I don't care what you call me, just call me. Right? I remember dating his brother like on the other side of Maryland. Excellent. I love his brother to death, but then he was my new God. He was in Baltimore. I lived in PG County. And I would leave my babies. And I would serve them oodles and noodles. I had a little girl. The one I came here pregnant with, she was a connoisseur of oodles and noodles. She knew everything about oodles and noodles, how to mix the eggs, how if you put the soy sauce, how to make Chinese food. She knew all that at 5 years old, because I'm over in Baltimore serving this ungrateful brother, filet mignon, $6 shots of coffee, cigars, and I got asthma. Right? And I'm telling this little girl, it's okay, mommy do love you. And I don't mean to leave you, but for some reason, I gotta go. And crack was not prevalent in my life. I had some clean time at that time. I don't know about you. I didn't come in here brimming with love and open-mindedness and willing to do anything different. I came in here with the same disease I lived with in the street. Because it didn't start with crack, it wasn't going to end with crack, and I needed to own the responsibility of what I carried. And what I carried was a message of no hope, I used to come to them. I share everywhere. I got off the speaking circuit a long time ago because at some point the lie had to stop ringing true. I had to stop being willing to go somewhere and tell somebody it's okay to be messed up as long as you keep coming. That is not the message of Narcotics Anonymous. That is not how we give the message to the newcomer and or the still suffering addict in the room. We tell you to get something different, you got to do something different. And sometimes you got to be willing to sit by your damn self. You got to be willing to shut off the voices. Sometimes the voice is going to be your sponsors as well. You got to cut out the noise so you can hear what God is trying to tell you. And what he's trying to tell you is that you are worthy. By the time I got to a place where I heard God for the first time since that last time, I was in a fetal position right here in Ocean City. Suffering from a relationship that wasn't of God. But I could not let it go because I needed that lie too. I needed that drug. I had that hole. And I thought being somebody's wife at some point was the answer to it all. I was still a little girl trying to grow up, man. And I got with other people that if we dressed up the outsides and we got into a circle, it became, man, that group of relationship people got so big. It was, everywhere we go, everybody in relationships connected to this circle, and it was poison. It was poison because everybody in there wasn't on the same page. We wasn't. Some of us was faking until we made it. I was one of the ones because I just needed to be somewhere. I needed an identity. I was tired of being somebody's little sister. I was tired of being 40 joints. I was sick of being Miss Sue's daughter. I was done being six kids' mother. I needed a name. God revealed himself to me right here at the Quality Inn, right down the street from this convention center, and he showed me who he was in me, that I already had a name. He told me that what he had for me was sacred, that he would protect me in his bosom, that he would love me until I learned how to love myself, that I had a light in me that couldn't nobody take from me, couldn't nobody shut it out, only me. Only I had the power to kill what he put in me. And I was just willing to stop putting everything over top of him, he will show me just what he could do in my life. We're talking about doing something different. I surrendered. We're talking about, the literature talks about when we grow in this process, we surrender on different levels. It wasn't no more about surrendering to the drugs. It wasn't no more about surrendering to the voices. It wasn't no more about surrendering to the noise. Popularity is a drug in Narcotics Anonymous. You can get good and high off that one, right? But it wasn't about that. What he showed me was it was nothing wrong with anybody else in my life. The problem was I didn't have him. I wasn't trusting him with everything. I wouldn't go to him. I would go to my network. I would go to my sponsor. I wouldn't pray to God. And I needed to say everything out of my mouth, just like I admitted for the first time I was an addict and I needed some help. So what happened was I surrendered. God showed up. He showed out. He removed words out my mouth like F-U, M-F-A, B. Y'all got to fill in the blanks yourself. I became a person that chooses to use life-enhancing words as opposed to the darkness or what some of us might know as black magic. I'm trying to speak some life into the person of the person that don't understand that we don't, the mentality on the street corner got to go. This ain't the corner. This is what we give. So the way we got it 20 years ago might not be effective to the addicts coming in today. So if I trust God, then what I give you is the God in me. And that's all. I'm newcomer friendly. I have a regular prayer life. I read books that enhance the quality of my spirit. I feed my spirit, man. And I try to pass that message on to the best I can. I don't do nothing perfect. Don't get it twisted. But what I do is I try with the, not trying from the seat, talking about I'm trying, I'm talking about I get up and I do something different. And I get better results. So I want to tell y'all, if you want to do something different, not him or her, then you need to stop blaming him or her. You can get out of the relationship all day long, but everywhere you go, there you are. So all you're going to do is take you into the next one. I did. And what happened is God had to show me one more time that he was still the best thing going. I need to rely on him. So I'm back into the lives of the people that I started in this thing. And I'm not always happy because I'm struggling a lot of times because I want everything to be perfect. I mean, what? I'm just liking feeling good right now. So I want it all the time. But the reality is life shows up. It shows out as well. The disease is a liar. God is good all the time. And if nobody told y'all, they love y'all today. And if you can't understand what I'm talking about today, keep coming. More will be revealed. And with that, I'm going to keep coming. Thanks for letting me share.